That's fine
with
me.
This meeting is now being recorded.
Shalom, everyone. This is Elliot Schoenberg, International Director of Placement for the Joint Placement Commission. We are joined today as well with Kathy Elias, Chief Kehillah Officer of the United Synagogue. And we have two presenters. We have Ruth Masser from the Bay Ridge Jewish Center, who will be our second speaker. We're going to begin with Rabbi Hillel Skolnick from Florida. Rabbi Hillel Skolnick, welcome to the conversation.
Thank you very much.
So let's talk a little bit about your transition. One of the pieces I'm particularly interested in is you were a graduate of rabbinical school, moving into your first full-time position, as opposed to a rabbi who'd been in the field for many years. Talk a little bit about the transition from school and from being a seminarian to actually being the rabbi of a congregation. Any surprises? What was most difficult for you? How did the congregation help with that piece?
Well, first, again, thank you for having me. And if any questions come up, I'm the rabbi of the Southwest Orlando Jewish Congregation here in Southwest Orlando in Florida. It's a great question. The truth is, for me personally, it was a much more interesting transition to go from being in school to being working full time, because I had been in school since I was five, and I took a year off to go on natives. But even then, I spent a semester at the conservative yeshiva and then worked on kibbutz. But I remember specifically one fall afternoon sitting down and watching a football game and saying, "Wow, this is so weird. I don't have any papers to write at the moment." Of course, I had sermons to work on. But the truth is, transitioning into the workplace was made easier by the fact that my congregants made very clear what their expectations were for me of what they wanted me to be doing with my time. And I think that's the biggest piece of advice that I can give. If you tell your new rabbi specifically what it is that you want them to be doing, and give them, rabbis should be allowed to, decide what, takes preference in terms of their day and how they're going to spend their hours. But you also need to, especially a new rabbi who's just out of rabbinical school, and especially if you're hiring a solo rabbi to take over by themselves as opposed to working as an assistant, the more guidance, the better. But to give the rabbi also the understanding that this is guidance. It's not instructions, it's not requirements or demands, but things that you might feel the synagogue could benefit from if you spend your hours working on these kinds of things. It might be thinking of new programs. It might be re-envisioning how the service is conducted. It might be re-examining the structure of the religious school if the synagogue has one. But I think articulating some expectations of things that the shul would like you to work on specifically would give guidance on what you want to do. And then you probably, or the new rabbi probably wouldn't find themselves saying, "Wow, I'm not in school anymore. What am I supposed to be doing with myself?" The other thing I've tried to do, though not always entirely successfully, has been to continue to use the skills that I learned in school in terms of text study and to use them to continue to learn and to continue to grow as a professional and as a personal and as a person and as a Jewish person who's interested in learning. It was advice that was given to me by a mentor of mine, which is that we never stop being a student of text, and we never stop being a student of our religion. And just because we're no longer in school doesn't mean that we need to stop learning. In fact, we should always be continuing to learn and continuing to study our holy text. So you might want to encourage your new rabbi to continue to grow and to use some of their time to not feel like they're in school, but to feel like they can continue to be a student of our religion. I think that might go a long way.
Rabbi Skolnick, this is Irv Ginsberg from Chattanooga. Up until a couple of years ago, we have three congregations. We have a conservative, an Orthodox, though the Orthodox has joined up with Chabad, and a Reform. And two or three times a month, the three rabbis would get together and study together. We're a small city, and that worked out extremely well.
I think that's fantastic. I think that's wonderful. And I applaud it. I think it's great. You know, in my mind, I was thinking something like that, or, you know, rabbis, when they graduate rabbinical school, they tend to miss their friends because they went from living to, you know, in a very close-knit community around the seminary where they attended. For me, it was up at JTS in New York. And now, you know, I live in Orlando, and there are a few other rabbis down here, but nobody who I went to school with. And, you know, Skype can be a very useful tool for that also. You know, I've heard, you know, they call a study session between two people a chevruta, but I've heard of people doing a Skype ruta, you know, of studying together over Skype. And I think that can be a useful thing for a new rabbi, to not only to continue to have their connections with their colleagues, but, as I said, to continue to grow in their own knowledge. And let's not forget the fact that these texts that they're learning can be useful to the congregation for study, for sermons, for teaching, for all kinds of practical applications.
So, Rabbi Scholar, let's talk a little bit about surprises.
Mm-hmm.
So you interviewed for the congregation, you were there for a Shabbat, you read their questionnaire, then you started to work as the rabbi. What surprises did you find, and how did you deal with them, and how did the congregation help you deal with them?
Well, the first surprise that I found was a positive one. I grew up going to the son of the rabbi of the Forest Hills Jewish Center, which is a big conservative synagogue in New York. You know, somewhere in the, you know, 600, 700, 800 families, depending on the demographics of the particular decade. And it's a very different feel from being the solo rabbi of 150, now 150 family, small synagogue in southwest Orlando. My first surprise was how active people are in terms of just their excitement and willingness and ability to dedicate their time and their energy and their resources and their things to the betterment and upkeep of the building. About 2 weeks after I started working, we had a clean-up or a spruce-up SOJCJ, and I was just delighted to find congregants who had brought their power washers and who had, you know, just come and closed, that they were ready to get dirty so that way they could help spruce up the synagogue. And it wasn't that it was so shocking that people would be excited about doing something like that. It was that people got there and they weren't like, oh, it's clean up the synagogue day. They were excited because they were there to do something that they could really do and that they really knew how to do. And I just found it really inspirational. So I think that was a wonderful thing. You know, it's always a surprise to, you know, get to know the different, you know, issues that any synagogue has, and every synagogue has its own little mishigasas, and, you know, you find out who gets along with who and who doesn't get along with who and who, you know, where the different, who the different power players are in the synagogue and the politics of the synagogue. But the way that I have been best able to figure all of these things out is to figure out who to go with my questions. And for me, that has always first and foremost been the president of the congregation, who is a good friend of mine and who has been instrumental in my transition to working at the synagogue. If anything comes up where somebody makes a comment to me that either surprises me or occasionally shocks me, or even from time to time somebody will say something that makes you feel a little bit uncomfortable, because that happens from time to time, she has been fantastic in terms of just being approachable and allowing me to come to her and ask her questions in confidence, knowing that what I ask her will not get back to whomever I have spoken to or been spoken to by. And she gives me advice, and we talk about how best to approach every different aspect of my job, be it work with committees or work with other professionals who work in the synagogue. And that has been a fantastic advantage that I've had, to have a really wonderful both working and personal relationship with the lay leadership of the synagogue.
So, Rabbi Skolnick, the South Orlando congregation, is it a Southern congregation, or is it displaced New Yorkers?
That's a great question. It's, you know, they're not all New Yorkers. We have some Rhode Islanders and New Jersey.
No, but that's the same thing. That's a New Yorker who made a mistake.
Well, that's fair enough. You know, there are a few people who were born and raised in Florida. Most people are transplanted from somewhere else. It's true. But the truth is that makes me comfortable, because I can identify with New Yorkers probably much better than I can with natural Floridians.
Well, I'm a Jewish kid from the Bronx who is apparently been chosen to become a president of a deep southern congregation.
Yeah.
And there are very few of us that talk the way I do.
Yeah. Well, and, where is the rabbi that you hired from?
She's a southerner also. She's coming from Norfolk. She's been a rabbi for 6 or 7 years, and so she's coming here with the experience. She's not coming right out of the seminary. And I've met her. In fact, spent a good deal of the time that she was here, you know, with the, both she and her husband and the kids. But I wondered if your reaction was, you know, the concern that I have is how the congregation is going to react to me. But they obviously saw something in the kid from the Bronx that, still talks funny.
Sure. Go ahead.
Well, this is Kathy Elias. If I can interject, it sounds like both of you are talking about essentially building relationships. And
right.
Rabbi, I'm aware of congregations that created a system where there was a small group of accompaniers of the rabbi for the full first year. I don't know if you ever saw the movie The Devil Wears Prada, where the Meryl Streep character walks into a big party and has two helpers with her who are kind of whispering in her ear, this is so-and-so, and her son is married to so-and-so, so that there's never an embarrassing moment in relationship building because there's so much pressure on the rabbi, and I would say also, you know, a president. Anyone needs those accompaniers so that you can build relationships. So it sounds
absolutely a fabulous idea. I'm a retired human resource executive who worked in rather large departments, and I could never remember the names of everybody. So I would normally have my wife with me, and she would introduce herself, and I would pick up the name right away, you know, and act as if I, really knew who I was talking to.
That's actually exactly what I was going to say, that my wife serves that purpose extraordinarily well. She happens to also be a rabbi and is very talented with remembering people's names. I think it's a fantastic idea. I think depending also on the size of the synagogue, it will depend on how many new names and new faces and new histories you have to learn. But I think it's a fantastic idea, and even if there's not somebody following you around, to know who to go to with those questions is also a critical thing.
And that is, in the best of what I've heard, there is a small group of people assigned exactly for that, who would be your support, the rabbi's support system for understanding historic culture, relationships, and to understand the dynamics that sometimes can trip up a new person to the community, whether the person is a rabbi or not.
Sure.
That's a great set of suggestions.
So can I ask if Ruth has joined us yet? Ruth Mather, are you on the phone yet?
Yes, I am. Thank you very much for inviting me to speak, and it's been a pleasure for me to listen to Rabbi Skolnick, and I agree with these beginnings and the insights to starting on this new position. I wish you lots of good luck, hatzlacha, along the way.
Thank you.
So, Rabbi Sundar, did you have another question for Rabbi Solomon?
Let's go with, no, you, why don't you proceed, Kathy? Go ahead.
Okay. Then Ruth is the president of the Bay Ridge Jewish Center, Sheres Israel, in Brooklyn, New York. And we asked Ruth to join us because she's able to speak about a little bit different dynamic where, Ruth, you have a situation where you have a very interesting dynamic in your congregation that your new rabbi needed a transition and help into your community. And if I can just summarize, and then you can tell us a little bit about how you handled it. You have a population of folks who regularly come to your services who are not necessarily members and have their own opinions about what a rabbi should look like or be, And as president, you had to navigate some pretty interesting, complicated waters. Regardless of your specifics with your story, I think we have many congregations that may have a different story, but that navigating of how you prepare, how you set the table for a new rabbi to come into a community that may be, you know, divided before that person gets there. That's what you had to navigate. Can you tell us a little about that?
Of course. First, I want to say that we are a synagogue that's over 90 years old, and we are the only synagogue in Bay Ridge, Brooklyn, which is a very, very diverse area in Brooklyn, a very wonderful and interesting area. And the Jewish population in Bay Ridge has always been considered to be a minority in the area. When the congregation got together and built our beautiful sanctuary, they had, in its heyday, over 500 members. They had to have a second service on the high holiday. Fast forward to now, to more recent years, we have been left with a small group of predominantly senior citizens, and over the years, we've had an influx of younger people. We've never gotten close to the membership that we've had in its glory days. Our experience has been of always being a traditional conservative synagogue, and what happened was that many people from the community would come in and say, I don't want to go back there because I can't really relate to the service. I don't understand Hebrew, and I don't know what's going on. So we made many attempts over the years to find a rabbi who would meet the needs of the community more so. We did make progress in that area, but it didn't really work that well till this time. Our last search was last year in the spring, and it culminated with a big change in that we hired first female rabbi at our synagogue ever. What that did was it created a big buzz and a lot of sense among many members.
I didn't hear the word that you used. It created what?
I said it created a lot of
buzz. But what was the next word? Sense.
It created a dissent. Dissent.
Oh, dissent. Dissent.
Yeah,
okay.
Disagreement. Disagreement.
Yeah, no. Yeah, I understand.
Yeah.
Right.
Okay. So we have a big echo. I would ask if those of you who are not speaking would mute yourselves. It might help because I know folks are hearing an echo.
Oh, I hear an echo, too. I was hoping that you didn't.
No, we all do. So if you're not, folks, if you would mute yourselves, your phones, that'd be great.
God, I have to figure out how to do that. Do you guys train in that respect as well?
I think it's gotten better.
I don't know how to use the phone.
Okay.
I'm lucky I got through.
Okay, keep going then, Ruth. It is better. Thank you.
Okay, so when we embarked on our search last year, we were really babes in the woods. Our other new rabbis had come to us in different ways, and this was our first start-to-finish search with the United Synagogue. And we had to work our way through the process. But specifically, the thing that you asked me about was something that came entirely unexpected. We figured, well, of course, if we're going to hire a female rabbi, there are going to be a lot of different viewpoints. I myself grew up in an Orthodox household and was very comfortable with traditional ways. I never thought in my life that I would be a member of a synagogue, let alone certainly the president of the synagogue, which I never thought would happen anyway. Be the president of a synagogue that had a female rabbi. So it was kind of a little bit of a shock to me as we went along with this. But I felt in my heart, I knew that the members on our search committee who were saying, this is what we need, I knew that they were correct. It was not that we went out looking specifically for a female rabbi. We didn't. We went out looking for a rabbi who was going to be someone that people in the community could feel, oh, I could go to that person. Oh, I can now come to the Bay Ridge Jewish Center. Someone that they could connect to. That's what we were looking for.
And what you found was that you had folks who kind of struggled with that. So if you had to advise, how did you handle it? I know that you dealt with the people who struggled, and as president, that was really, courageous. How did you help the rabbi then once you brought rabbi on board?
Well, what happened was that the membership was really very much behind hiring a female rabbi and hiring this rabbi in particular. We had several rabbis come for weekends. We had three, as a matter of fact, and this was the third rabbi who came for a weekend. And what happened unexpectedly was that all of a sudden this group of people that are not members but come regularly, they were suddenly opposed to a female rabbi. Most of them were Russian people, and they weren't used to it. There were cultural differences. And I figured, okay, you know, people are going to adjust. And what happened was they circulated a petition. There was a group of about 30 people who signed the petition, and they very clearly expressed that they wanted to keep the old rabbi. They were comfortable. They liked a lot of things about him, and they certainly did not want a female rabbi, and they wanted to meet to discuss this. So the first thing that I did was I felt that I had to address it head on, otherwise there would be too much grumbling and rumbling, and nobody would be happy. So I immediately called a meeting, and which was a little difficult because
Whatever you're not comfortable talking about the specifics, but essentially, Kol HaKavod to you that you were able to work with your congregants to prepare the way for your rabbi to enter. So how did you help her enter the community? Since these were people who were going to be in services with her. You knew that. So what did you do
absolutely.
With her?
Well, but I just want to say that it's important that I met with the dissatisfied group. And I told them that I was really very happy to see that so many of them came out, that they cared so much about the synagogue, to take the time at night to come to the meeting and express themselves. And I wanted to hear from each and every one of them, and I did. So that was an important thing. Then when we met with the new rabbi and we sat down to fine-tune aspects of her contract, I told her very specifically that I wanted her to know in advance that there was opposition to her as the new rabbi. And I told her what it was, and I showed her the petition that was signed, and I explained to her that this was a big change for people, and some of them would adjust to it, and some of them might not. And I wanted her to be prepared.
But these were non-members.
Well, that's how it is here in Bay Ridge.
We can fast forward to now this Sunday. You have installation for her.
I am absolutely delighted to say that really what happened was of that group who signed the petition, there were some that left. There were some people, when she came on board, we never saw them again. And the majority, and that was a very small group of people, and the majority, in fact, stayed and are participants and contributors in every way, and they're here because they want to be here, and we are delighted about that. We waited until now. She started in August. I'm very happy to say she's been working very hard. I am working very, very hard, harder than I ever did before. and more than I thought I ever would work as president. And so are the other people on the board and the other offices. And we're working this hard because we feel that we have to work alongside of our new rabbi and work with her, because how is she going to know what's what and who's who if we're not there working with her? And we have made tremendous changes from things that you can see, like the physical plant. We've made different kinds of changes and improvements. After all, we have a building that's about 70 years old and is falling apart. And two things of working on programs. And our rabbi has done some amazing things. Like, she has brought in new, young families who have moved to the area. And it's like, oh, wow, this is someone I can talk to. And she has visiting hours constantly. One thing I will say about her, I don't know if this is her personality or she learned this in school, but she is a whiz at time management. And when you have a meeting with the rabbi, it has a start and it has a finish, and she's on schedule. And if you're late, meeting still ends on time. And in that way, she has appointments one after, I mean, I'll meet with her and she'll say, we have to wrap up. I'm seeing a new young family in 10 minutes. What's that? She's going to say, I have a new young family in 10 minutes. So our rabbi has increased our Hebrew school from 2 students in September to 15.
Wow.
She has brought in about 12 new member families. She's instituted numerous activities, Tat Shabbat, first Friday night of the month, family potluck dinners, many different kinds of programs and classes. And what it has done for me as president is it's kept me hopping. And she and I meet every week, once a week for an hour. We talk about what's coming up. We talk about what has to be advertised, how it should be advertised, how it should be promoted. We talk about how we can start new committees, who should be on the committees.
Mm.
Our rabbi has started a new Enhance the Ritual committee. She's starting a new education committee.
Is she a younger woman?
So what I'm hearing you say, Ruth, is, and we'll turn it back to Rabbi Schoenberg, because I know you had a couple of other things, Rabbi. But essentially, Ruth, what I'm hearing you say is your lay leadership and your rabbinic search committee made a very clear decision about what the needs of your community were, and the risk was that there would be dissension. You took care of it. You fully and transparently prepared the rabbi, and it allowed the rabbi to take off, and you're actualizing what you had hoped. And so thank you so much for that story. Rabbi Schoenberg, I know
This is Irv Ginsberg. Unfortunately, I'm going to have to leave because I've got an emergency I need to deal with. But Ruth, you talked about potluck dinners. Glatt kosher?
Oh, my God.
Glatt kosher? No. They're dairy. Potluck dairy dinners.
What
I can guarantee is that offline we'll be able to connect you with Ruth's name so that as president you can talk to each other. Would that be okay?
I just got a phone call from my daughter.
Right, very good.
Okay.
Rabbi Schoenberg?
You can get my address from Lynn Hochman.
Yes, for sure.
This has been very valuable for me. I've already made some notes. Thank you so much, and shalom. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Rabbi Skolnick,
hello?
Let's go back to you for a moment.
Rabbi Schoenberg?
Yes.
Can I ask a question of Ruth and Rabbi Skolnick?
Go ahead.
Sure.
So, my name is Gary Portnoy, and I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota, and we're a 100-year-old congregation, and we have approximately 1,100 families. We typically had two rabbis, and for past 3 years, we've only had one rabbi, and I co-chaired the search committee, and I was out at JTS in February for interview week, and we hired a new rabbi. And my question is, you know, how did you get your rabbi totally integrated into, you know, the synagogue? We have many different, in our synagogue, we have, you know, different constituencies, and I'm looking for, you know, I think now our search committee becomes a welcoming committee, and I'm looking for some ideas of what you did to get the rabbi acquainted with all the families, as many as possible.
Well, if I can say that I think 1,100 families is a far cry from 60 families. So
I'm sure it is. That's why I'm on the call, trying to get some ideas.
Well, one of the things that our rabbi did, actually, she had a lot of ideas that never occurred to us. One of the things that she did was to start to visit people in the community that were homebound. And many of those people have relatives who do attend services, and that enabled her to make a wonderful connection to both the person at home and the families that do attend. I think that by making these connections, the congregants feel a particular connection. So that was one of the things that she started with.
Okay.
Rabbi Skolnick, did you have any kinds of town meetings or any arranged house visits or anything in your community?
The synagogue, when I came down to Orlando with my family for the first time to look for a house to live, actually, which took place in May, they conducted basically a meet and greet one evening when we were here, where people had the chance to come and get to meet me again and to meet my wife for the first time. And I think that was really instrumental in people getting a chance to schmooze with us in a more informal setting. When we got down here, there were definitely people who came over, who stopped by to welcome us, to bring us like challah and grape juice for Shabbat, or wine for Shabbat, things like that. You know, my feeling is that the more you do, the better. Even if it, you know, you don't ever need to stop doing those things. In a synagogue of 1,100 families, you could have, you know, people welcoming the new rabbi for the next 800 years, which would be, I think, only wonderful for the synagogue. And obviously, the senior rabbi would need to be a big part of that also and be right on the forefront. But I think it's a wonderful idea to set up ongoing things, because it takes a good amount of time for a rabbi to feel comfortable in the community, you know, socially over the course of a long period of time. So even, you know, even as you get towards 6 months, 7 months, 8 months that your new assistant rabbi has been there, I would just encourage you to keep the outreach coming from members of the synagogue. It will only serve to help, I think.
Rabbi, go ahead, Kathy.
This is Ruth Major again. Every Shabbat after services, we have a kiddush where people have the chance to sit down and schmooze, and the rabbi has a nice opportunity to meet with people at that time.
So one of the pieces, this is Rabbi Schoenberg, one of the pieces to emphasize all the way around about integrating someone new into the community is not to emphasize the program, but as Kathy Elias said, emphasize building relationships. Because there's been a real theme to our conversation. The way that you integrate the outsider, the outlier in, is giving them opportunity to create relationships. Whether it's supplying a list of names of people whose families suffered a death in the family the prior year, so the new rabbi could revisit and pay a shiva visit a year later, or other people who have certain needs, live-ins, whatever it is, asking your intimate group of people who are on the search committee, how can we enable our new rabbi to build relationships? Who should that rabbi be building relationships with? who might the rabbi not think to take out to lunch to go in and do that. That's been a real sort of theme of our conversation. So I'm going to conclude with one final question for Rabbi Skolnick. Since Ruth already told us that this coming week is installation for the new rabbi, Rabbi Skolnick, I know you had an installation. Would you just say a few words about what it meant to you and why installations are important to rabbis?
Well, it was a beautiful evening, and it meant a tremendous amount to me that people would come out and celebrate once more the fact that I made the commitment to come down and be their rabbi. As synagogues would do and really should do, we took it as a fundraising opportunity for the synagogue, and people put ads in a beautiful booklet that was put together by volunteers of the synagogue, and you know, just people expressed in words and through their presence how excited they were for me to be there and for my family to be there. And it was a beautiful evening, you know, to have a chance to get together, to you know, to get dressed up and to dine together and to dance a little bit together and to enjoy each other's company, and for them to sit and listen to me once more, even though they do on a regular basis, was beautiful, and it was charming, and it was sweet, and it really was meaningful and powerful to me that people were able to be there. It was, of course, meaningful to me that my father was able to be there and to install me into my seat as the rabbi of the synagogue, so that was an extra benefit for me personally. But I think installations are a wonderful thing. They're useful for the synagogue, and any excuse to celebrate, I think, is one that synagogues should take advantage of. There's enough times that we have that we go through together that we have to mourn together, and we need to be taking advantage of any opportunity we have to celebrate as well, and installations are a great excuse for it.
So as way of summary, let me suggest to everyone that integrating a new rabbi into community is complex, and there are many resources available. And one of them that I want to emphasize at this point is that on June 12th, we will have the 8th Ratzon Conference, the Transition Conference, for congregations and their incoming rabbis to come together and spend the day to talk about many of the issues we've discussed today and many more, and develop a vocabulary around transition and to raise awareness about how complex these issues are and what are some of the solutions. And United Synagogue has many resources. You can be in touch with Kathy Elias about that. Plus, the Mocha Monday recordings from last year and the year before have other conversations with other guest presenters about transition as well. So let me conclude by saying thank you to Rabbi Skolnick from Southwest Orlando, Florida, from Ruth Besser from the Bay Ridge Jewish Center for participating and being our presenters today. And we'd like to thank you very much for listening to Mocha Mondays, which is Meditations on Career Advancement, presentation of the Rabbinical Assembly and the United Synagogue. Thank you all very much for being with us today. And this concludes our conversation.
Bye-bye.